Hi everyone, and welcome to the week ahead. We're going to try and start a slightly expanded. We're taking out a whole nother country slash continent. So Henry, welcome to our weekly little get together that Dominique and I like to have. And we and all our clients, I'm sure, would be very much looking forward to hearing your views on Bank of England, and obviously anything on ECB if you want as well. How we usually start is we kind of go over the past week. So in this case, maybe Dominique, you could kind of start and go through. Obviously, we had the Fed this week, some interesting market reaction. What were your big takeaways? And then Henry, you can do the same, certainly for Bank of England.
Cool. Main event was the Fed, broadly as I expected. So I come out with stronger conviction on the first cut in June. The broadly as expected is basically Chair Powell sticking to disinflation is continuing more slowly. We are on a bumpy road, but we are quite reasonably confident, not confident enough to cut yet, but reasonably confident that disinflation is continuing. What I thought was interesting was that he clearly wants to milk the sort of positive supply shock that is hitting the US. So this combination of disinflation and strong growth for everything it has, he is not going to sacrifice growth in order to go back to target faster. And that's how I read the small increase in both growth and core PCE in 2024 in the SCP. So that was actually a bit more dovish than I thought. That's basically why I come out with a stronger conviction on the Fed starting to cut in June. The bar for doing that is very low. I mean, he's raised core PCE, Q4 core PCE to 2.6% from 2.4%. You look at where it is now, 2.8%. So as long as core PCE doesn't go up from here, I think we're quite guaranteed the three cuts this year.
Oh, so you're saying by him raising the core PCE, he's actually kind of giving himself even more room to still feel comfortable to be able to cut in June.
Oh, very much so, because you'd expect, so first to make clear, the dot is not something negotiated and agreed by FOMC members, unlike the statement or even Chair Powell's spiel at the presser. It's something that's it's projections that are submitted independently by each meeting participant. The Friday before the meetings, they have a chance to revise them at the end of the first day of the meeting. But still, I mean, this is a guide of how they see the macro mix evolving over the next 12 months. So if they raise core PCE, their core PCE forecast at the end of the year, it means that they will proceed with their planned three cuts as long as as long as core PCE is consistent with that raised forecast. So yeah, they are giving themselves more leeway. I
Right.
think they'd like to cut.
And what's your delta? What's your percentage on a June cut now?
So before I was about 55%. Before the meeting, now I'd say 65%,
Okay,
two-thirds.
so you're relatively in line with where the market
I am,
is priced. Okay,
unfortunately,
so
but
not bad.
sometimes even the consensus can be right.
True. Okay, over to you, Henry. Yeah, certainly Bank of England, if you want to talk about ECB as well. So kind of, yeah, any surprises? What were your big takeaway? Were you surprised by market reactions as well?
Yeah, sure thing. So I mean, thanks for having me on this side of the floor, so to speak. It's a more of an interesting view from this side. So I mean, I think the main takeaways from last week, I mean, focusing on the UK side was first we had the UK inflation. That came out a little bit more dovishly, so it was a bit of a miss versus what the market had been expecting. We'd been penciling in a bigger miss, so it was slightly less dovish, I suppose, than we had been expecting, and part of that was on services ticking back up a little bit. But the tone from the Bank of England was very much, I think, more dovish than had been widely expected, and certainly than what we'd been expecting as well. So for context, it wasn't a meeting where they update their forecasts, nor one where they give a presser. So it was never going to be that interesting. But at the same time, the voter pattern. So the two hawks who'd been basically going after a hike for forever. So the Mann and Haskell, they both shifted to backing a pause. So we'd expected Haskell to shift, but Mann has been just sort of uber hawk for the longest time. That's really hard to tell whether she was actually going to shift. I wouldn't read too much into that. I think, I mean, their external members, they tend to be a bit more outspoken. So it's not that sort of not that kind of telling on that front. But the fact that they added in quite a lot of wording that came out a lot more dovish, I think, was more interesting. So the fact that they added in, for example, a comment around if they were to cut, they would still be pretty restrictive. So basically kind of opening the door to cutting, but trying to sort of, I guess, pare back expectations around that the market might have in terms of pricing too much in beyond that. Because bear in mind that their policy kind of transmits to the economy is really in the 3 to 5 year swap space. It's not in the bank rate. So that's where they really care what's being priced in. So, I mean, broadly, it's kind of aligned with what we've been saying. We've been looking for a June cut since sort of February. Before that, we were actually looking for a May cut. So we've been consistently more dovish than the market through this. And interestingly, I think, obviously, I mean, dovish reaction, UK rates kind of bull steepened on the day, the sterling sold off. It's all kind of to be expected. But at the same time, the day after, so just this morning, on the Friday, the comments from Bailey, I think, were probably a little bit more interesting in many ways. He kind of doubled down on the idea of like cutting ahead, and also seemed to be suggesting that they would look through some of the unemployment numbers, so the very low unemployment numbers we've been getting from the ONS. Partly it's because they're not very credible, but partly it just seems like the disinflation that they're seeing, whilst that remains the case, which is like kind of our base case, they're not really going to be too concerned if unemployment stays too low in official or kind of survey data. And that had really been the reason why we'd shifted from May cut to a June cut, so become a bit more hawkish, was because we'd had these really strong unemployment numbers. So if the Bank of England is looking through that, it does raise the risk that they do decide to go in May instead, because that is an MPR. So that is a time when they're going to be updating their forecasts. But at the same time, I think my base case right now is that the data won't allow them to do that just yet. So unless we were to get a really big miss in the next few numbers, I would still stick for probably June, more likely, is when the data will force their hand.
What
Henry,
is like
what?
the last 6 months UK inflation? Because it was much higher than the US, on an annualized basis. And now I guess if you look at just the last 6 months, where the US has been kind of stabilizing, I guess, more at a slightly higher level, is that driven by like energy costs or something else? Because I see services is still like really high.
I mean, so there's a couple of things to sort of pass, I guess. The UK had a really strong inflation number, very big overshoot, partly on the way its energy pricing is constructed. So it's very backward looking. It sticks around for a long time. It used to be sort of half yearly. Now it's every quarter it revises in terms of household energy. And also the way that the UK in general pricing mechanisms work. So rent has been very, very strong, much stronger than the rest of Europe, partly because we have these far larger exposure to private landlords and buy-to-let mortgages. So basically you can almost pass that out as policy transmission, really, as in they hike rates and rents rise to kind of cover the mortgage cost. But then there's also a lot of things. For example, we revise a lot of the pricing gets revised in April, So it tends to, on the way up in inflation spikes, rise faster, and then on the way down fall faster as well, because it's looking at a later rate, and also some exposure to RPI as well, which is just tends to be a higher rate. So there's a number of sort of metrics or mechanisms that kind of have forced UK inflation higher over this sort of whole period. I would say that, I mean, since the middle of, certainly since the end of 2023, but in services, we've seen basically a return more towards trend, the trend sort of monthly inflation. So if you annualize it, it's basically been back just around above two. In core and headline, it's been probably from the middle of 2023 that's been sort of going on, which is one of the reasons why we've been quite dovish, that and the sort of pressure that the consumer's been under. Compare that to, I mean, the US has been sort of, it had stabilized around that same time, but then has had some volatility since then. Obviously, Dom can talk a lot more about that. Europe, by contrast, has really bounced recently. So partly that's just subsidies falling away. But it's something that the Eurozone, by comparison, is much more kind of concerned about. This sort of Q1 bounce, I guess. And one of the reasons why we've liked basically receiving short end sterling swaps versus short end, paying short end euro swaps as a kind of play of a more hawkish ECB versus pricing versus a more dovish Bank of England. So, for a very long story, it's normalized quite a lot, actually. And there's a lot of different ways to cutting it where you can kind of pull your conclusion out. But it seems like the Bank of England's very much kind of coming around to that view as well more recently.
I was going to ask Henry, what does Bailey think about financial conditions? Because here in the US, financial conditions keep easing. So one of the journals asked Powell if that was a concern. And his reply was, well, the labor market is rebalancing, so financial conditions must be tight. So not very worried.
Yeah, I mean the Bank of England comment around financial conditions was basically that it's kind of a bit mixed. There's easing in certain places, but kind of tightening in others, and it's kind of from their kind of calculations, it remains it's looser than it was when the sort of peak of, I guess, just after all the hikes, but it's still comparatively tight. And I think versus sort of history, I think the important thing is, we're still getting feed through of policy. So there's still people, for example, in the mortgage space who are, there may be the mortgage rate
Sorry,
is, sorry.
I think I froze during some of that, so we'll have to cut that out.
Oh, sorry. Oh, no worries.
Yeah.
Which point did you freeze?
About financial conditions in the UK.
Okay, I'll just start that again. Probably be trying to be more pithy. So, I mean, in terms of financial conditions and what the Bank of England said about them, their comment was quite mixed in terms of them being tighter in some respects and looser in others, in terms of which market you look at. When you look at the kind of overall position, they do look comparatively tight versus history, but they have loosened a bit since the sort of peak in terms of mortgage rates, etc. I think one thing to that is worth bearing in mind is there's still transmission of policy going through. So even though mortgage rates now are lower than they were, say, in September or the end of the last year, the people who are remortgaging will be remortgaging at a much higher rate still than they were sort of 3 years ago when they first got the mortgage on average. So there is still comparatively tight financial conditions. And we have seen that sort of weigh on the consumer. So UK consumer has been kind of running up its savings and very unwilling to spend too much in general, which may kind of fade away ahead, but for now it's still kind of comparatively tight.
It's interesting because in the US, the consumer is spendthrift. I mean, they are spending, if you look at spending relative to income, it's actually higher than before the pandemic.
I mean, it's something I think that the Bank of England is going to be conscious of, the fact that savings have been run up. People are very kind of a little bit concerned about the future. And if that does start to ease, what they don't want to see is this big spending suddenly coming back into the market and suddenly the firms having pricing power to raise costs, or sorry, to raise their profit margins and ramp prices up there. Because that's not so far the sort of qualitative kind of comments that they've had, has been that firms having trouble passing on price rises.
Oh, okay. The last thing, just to tie it together, I had seen that where the US is continuing to run pretty significant, the government, pretty significant deficits. The UK government's been, I guess, much more conservative, and that potentially should have a knock-on support or hindrance for the economy. Do you guys see that as well?
I mean, so Don can probably talk.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I think it's a difference between having the world currency and not having it. I mean, basically, this gives the US enough rope to ha hang itself and keep building this huge deficit. In the UK, I guess the budget constraints is much tighter.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. But so, in short, yeah, the Chancellor's basically had his hands tied by a lot of budget rules. There has been some easing, but a lot of the easing has been kind of based on trying to sort of support the supply side as well. Tax burden's very high. I think one of the this is an a sort of a situation that I don't think a change in government's really going to change. They're going to still be equally kind of hands tied, really, with regards to the sort of OBR rules. And I think it's one of the important consequences out of the sort of short Truss kind of quartering tenure, I guess, which is that there was such a terrible reaction in the market of cutting the OBR out of the process and trying to sort of ease and spend borrow to do so, that now the OBR is one very, very important, even more important, if anything, now, because if you try and cut them out, people get scared that they'll have a similar effect. And two, or try and even push them a bit too much. And two, the idea of just borrowing to spend is also kind of been completely canned. So yeah, I think it's partly a kind of self-imposed prudence, but partly also this these rules and stuff.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Okay, so that now from both of you guys is a quick one on week ahead. What, you know, Dominic, maybe you start. What are the key things you're looking out for that our clients, anything that you think is not widely accepted that could be a real concern for the markets?
Not really. I mean, obviously for the US, it's PC, PC, PC. But Chair Powell already told us that the Fed own estimate of core PC is well below 0.3%. He wouldn't have said that publicly if he didn't have a strong confidence. So the surprise element of that most important number from the Fed perspective is gone. If we go into next week, since this time around, we are doing a key event for the next 2 weeks. NFP, obviously, and as always, and as Powell said, what is important in the NFP is not the headline employment number. It's a balance between demand and supply. So it's way first and foremost wages, and then unemployment. So over the next couple of weeks, these are my two most important points. I'll just give a third one, and then I'll let Henry give his own view. And it's personal saving and spend personal spending and income and the savings rate. Because I still have a very positive view on the U.S. economy, but one of the downside which I'm monitoring is a risk that, you know, we've had this enormous increase in credit card delinquency. So far, it's limited to a small group of consumers. But if it becomes a broader issue, it's going to start impacting the savings rate. People will have to save more in order to stay current on their debt payment. And that could have a growth impact. So, not my base case scenario by far, but definitely monitoring very closely. And that's why the savings rate in my books is the third most important data point over the next couple of weeks.
Awesome. Henry?
Yeah, sure, I think so. I mean, the next 2 weeks are going to be a bit quieter than they have been the last 2 weeks in Europe. I think the main thing is going to be the European CPI. So for March, the preliminary number. So we start getting some of the national numbers next week. So we get France, Italy, and I think Spain. And then the week after, we'll get the German and the headline. So the aggregate Europe number, that's super important right now because, I mean, for the ECB, this is going to be basically the final print they get before their April meeting. From my perspective, is that they're going to cut in June earliest. But if we were to get a strong number in the March, particularly in things like services, which have been kind of ticking up in momentum recently, then it could also mean that the market starts to pair some of the pricing around the likelihood that they cut in June. So I think there's hawkish risk there. I'm looking for sort of overall right now, I'm looking for about 3% on core year on year for the Eurozone headline. So Eurozone aggregate core number that is. So yeah, we'll sort of see how that comes out. I think the other thing that is kind of interest and kind of building the kind of background view is the a couple of surveys. So we've got final PMIs, which is obviously watched closely for particularly for effects on employment. So whether the companies are still hiring and pass through of costs, particularly on services more than manufacturing. And then we also have the UK Decision Makers Panel survey, which comes out at the start of April. So that's the thing that will basically, it's a survey of companies or businesses. So we'll be watching for signs that they are normalizing or re-anchoring the expectations of price rises, which has kind of been the trend so far. And then we've also got the ECB's sort of CPI outlook. So we'll be sort of looking again for a similar thing, which is something that the ECB is probably more concerned about than the Bank of England, which is just the risk that prices get unanchored in terms of expectations, and that feeds into wage growth, et cetera.
Okay, awesome. So as we normally like to do at the end, I'll just highlight a few of the professional pieces this past week, several of which are written by the two of you. Today, it's actually funny, it's something we were discussing yesterday about a possible move in the renminbi. And is it interesting to buy upside, buy vol in general, which has been getting crushed? And also the skew is actually in kind of three or, well, before the US election, skew is pretty close to flat. So upside in dollar China, we thought potentially could be interesting. We had a decent sized move, certainly in the level of volatility we've seen the last few months on dollar China. So we think that move could continue a bit more, but we don't see a massive move. We think it's, you know, the Chinese authorities will look to keep kind of a, you know, relatively low volatility, kind of stable markets, especially with everything still happening in the property markets. But they may allow some depreciation, obviously in line with what's happening in Japan, but probably less of a focus in years past. Henry, you and the guys obviously wrote a great piece on the power of the power of the dove. Fed soft landing against Dominique as well. Interesting piece. I had a really good call from the FX guys around Euro Swiss, and then obviously the kind of surprise cut helped push that trade day after we closed it. But I think we still kind of liked it. I think at this point, actually, a lot of the data has traditionally actually said that perhaps this is a time to fade the move. So I think we're looking at different ways to play that, including one of the ways, which is a short euro against a kind of a trade-weighted index, and being Swiss being a core part of that. So there's an interesting piece out on that. EM focus on kind of Fed seasonality, support carry. You know, so kind of like those obviously higher carry trades, even though we kind of closed some of that stuff out. But in EM, still feels like certainly, Dominique, with your view on a supportive Fed and decent growth feels like friendly to our EM currency fans. And the other stuff, yeah, FOMC review, which a lot of what we touched, views on South Africa, a new cool interesting way to play potentially a move up too far on oil and really kind of do it through a futures trade, kind of a time spread. But this would be a trade that would benefit from the front end in oil coming back down. That's from Varesh. He's had some great calls. This already, I think, is starting to play pretty well. And obviously a whole bunch of other stuff. So I don't know any parting words from you guys. I'll just wish everyone good luck. You know, this is a timestamp on a London afternoon. So wish everyone a nice weekend as well. How about you guys?
Well, good luck, everybody, and thank you for listening.
Yep, no, thanks very much, and have a happy Easter if we don't speak before.
Yeah, exactly. Happy Easter. Cool. Good luck. Bye.